And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. Our very special guest today is author Ann Candido. Her book is Superhighway of Relevancy, Getting More People to Choose Your Brand More Often Indefinitely. Ann, welcome to our show.
I am well. How are you?
It's great to have you on. Hey, tell us a little bit about your career journey at Procter & Gamble that led to you writing this book, Superhighway of Relevancy.
Sure. Well, you know, I got to start back in my childhood, because really my career journey starts with, you know, a lot of people's career journeys, I guess, with my mom and my dad. And interestingly, they both impacted me at different parts of my career journey. So my dad is an engineer. So obviously, going into engineering. I went to University of Dayton for mechanical engineering, and then into Procter & Gamble, and spending my first 10 years in product development. That obviously had an impact on me. And the reason why, and I always think this is so important to reiterate, is that he actually shared his career with me when I was young. So he would take me on job sites, and he would allow me to see what he did. And that really gave me a really good idea of what engineers do, because, you know, there's not really any TV shows about engineers. And, you know, there's more like reality shows now. But, you know, when I was growing up, you know, you got to see what doctors, lawyers, and policemen do, and that's an easy thing to assimilate. But like engineers is like, I don't know what that is. So that really helped me in my career progression, and then really helped me to establish a really firm grounding of who I was and who I wanted to be. My mom, on the other hand, is she was a communications major. And has become a prolific author, so that makes a, you know, total sense as to how her and her career choice and, you know, what she did also has impacted me, but a little bit later in life. So she really kicked in on my second decade at P&G, where I decided that even though I loved engineering, I loved product development, I wanted to be closer to the business. I wanted to have more impact on the business decisions, and felt like I had a lot to offer there. So I spent my second decade at P&G in influencer marketing and public relations. And that's where I really crafted a lot of the philosophy and thinking that I have that actually went into the book, as well as the philosophy and thinking I now use to help guide my clients, both in a building brand love strategies, but also I now have a co-founder for a new company, Forthright People, which helps small and mid-sized businesses with their on-demand marketing challenges.
Well, it sounds like your parents were great mentors. Tell us about some of your wonderful mentors at Procter, including Paul Fox.
Well, that's one of my favorite things to talk about. So since you mentioned Paul, I'll mention Paul too, because he was not only a mentor for me inside the company, but also now outside the company. As you're very familiar with too, and you actually are demonstrating, you know, the transition from corporate life to, you know, a life of being an entrepreneur isn't always easy. But you know, I am somebody, as you know, coming from Procter world and spending 20 years there, you know, maybe it was a little bit arrogant thinking that it was going to be easier for me than other people. And it wasn't. And that was a real big shock to me, and really required me to really rely on my mentors, really network in order to get that insight that I needed in order to really get through the struggle and find my place in this new world. So Paul was definitely one of those guys inside the company. You know, Paul is one of he's probably not going to, you know, I'm going to reveal a little bit of his secret sauce, so he's probably going to come back to me about this. But I just think it's fun to you know, really kind of talk about people in the way that they really were. So Paul was one of those who people were actually a little bit intimidated by Paul, but always had such really, like, fantastic pointed feedback. And in the way that it really enabled you to grow, but also in a very supportive way. But he would tell you if you screwed up. And so you knew, too, if you're going to go up to him and talk to him in his office, you know, he'd kind of lay back in the seat and put his feet up on his desk. He goes, so what'd you do now, Ann? What'd you do now? And it was always a very honest and a very transparent conversation. And then very quickly, though, he'd be like, okay, well, this is how we're going to go fix it, you know. And so it was never meant to be a way to bring you down. It was always meant to be a way to bring you up. And I think that's what that authenticity, the transparency was really valuable for me and became a foundation of who I was because it allowed me to rely on being able to lean forward without fear of retribution. And that's a really hard thing to do, especially achievers and people who want to really accomplish a lot. So he was definitely fundamental. And now in this day and age of being in an entrepreneur side and him successfully making that transition has provided a ton of guidance for me on how to persevere, how to think through it, how to maintain self in, despite everything that's kind of going along around me, and really how to like make it very focused and tangible and something that I could sell. Because now, you know, you're selling yourself as much as you're selling whatever you're doing. So he's been really helpful for the, to me on that. And then there's been multiple others. I don't know how many you want me to go into.
Tell us a little bit more about others.
Okay, great. Well, I'll give you another PNGer. And then I think I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about some of my virtual mentors too. So another PNGer, Scott Motz, also very like, was a fabulous marketing director and did really great things for the business at P&G, also successfully transitioned outside of P&G and now is a very popular author and keynote speaker. So highly recommend Scott for any leadership keynotes or any personal coaching. And, you know, that was hard for me, too, to admit that I needed a coach. Like a lot of people, again, a lot of achievers, especially coming out of, you know, a place like Procter where you're cultivated to be the kind of the top of the top, it's hard to admit, hey, I need a coach or maybe I need a consultant or maybe I don't know everything I need somebody with a little bit more experience, a little bit more perspective because it makes you vulnerable. It makes you feel somewhat weak. But what I remind everybody now when I get the same feedback to, you know, clients that I'm trying to coach or people I'm trying to coach is like, you know what, even Tiger Woods has a swing coach. Right, he's one of the best golfers ever, and he has a swing coach. And why? Because he has blind spots, and he recognizes that, and he can't watch himself swing. So you need to have somebody who can watch you swing. They need to be able to have the experience of and the knowledge, and maybe they have more experience and knowledge than you have, and that helps to provide critical feedback that's going to help you grow, and it's all in pursuit of growth. So Scott's been that for me. He came on right when I was deciding that I was going to leave P&G, and ironically, after about my 20-year anniversary, I decided I was going to leave, and I had started preparing mentally for that. But then, and I thought maybe it's going to be another 2 years, and then things kind of happen in the way that you put them out to the universe sometimes, and it was accelerated from 2 years to about 6 months. And I remember calling Scott, and I said, you know, when we were going through this exercise, if I lost my job tomorrow, what would I do? I'm like, yeah, we got to kind of accelerate that. And it wasn't the fact that I was losing my job so much as my role was being redefined. And it was just a good inflection point to rethink my future with the company. But it was, he got right on board and he helped me think through it, helped me to outline, again, a very important question of if I lost my job tomorrow, what would I do? And what do I have to sell? And those are two critically important questions that any entrepreneur needs to address. And then putting meat behind those bones so that I actually could put it into something, again, tangible that added value to folks and that I could actually sell. And we did that very, very quickly. And he's been that force for me, which is like he kicks me in the butt when I need it, but then he also lifts me up when I need it too. So he's really good at contextualizing both of those sides, and that's been really important because I can just be whatever. I can ask him whatever question I need, and I don't have to, you know, fear that he's going to judge me. And you need to have a trusted source like that, that you can just have, you know, those candid conversations and not feel like you can be judged or not feel like it's going to come back to haunt you. And that's that he's been really critical to my growth from that standpoint.
Well, here's to Scott. We know Scott really well and have had him on our show. He is truly a walking, talking leader and mentor. He reminds us a lot of Charlotte Otto, but Charlotte is really different. She's her own beacon of light with a great vision.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I totally acknowledge Charlotte. Charlotte was our VP of communications when I just came into communications, and the only word to describe her is just visionary. And she just was able to cultivate that category and that function in a way that nobody's been able to do before her or since her. And she just loved it. I mean, she just loved it. I mean, I remember one of my first experiences in communications was that she had all the new people out to her house to have dinner. I mean, there was maybe 100 of us in her house, so opened her house to us and had dinner there. And she was just the most, I mean, relatable, just most like, I mean, just, I mean, a good person. I mean, and she's just so smart. I mean, wicked smart. So yeah, I have a total, you know, a lot of appreciation for Charlotte for sure.
Now let's talk about your book. When did the light bulb go on to write this book, and how did you land on the title?
Sure. So, you know, very pragmatically speaking, and I'm sure you can, and you know, all of your guests can attest to this too, is, you know, having a book adds a lot of credibility. It also allows you to be able to synthesize your thinking into a format that is somebody can digest offline. So brand love and the idea of branding and marketing is sometimes hard for people to wrap their minds around, especially small and mid-sized businesses who don't have necessarily the in-house infrastructure or the experience or the time or the money to really build that kind of marketing engine, if you will. And so a lot of times what we don't know or we don't understand or we don't have time to go and figure out, we kind of disregard, we put on the back burner. And in this day and age where there is so much access to information, I mean, the world is big and small at the same time, right? Like we can like get on the internet and we can find out anything about anything in a very short period of time, but it's small in the fact that as soon as you put something out there, it can travel very, very fast. So it's kind of this like dichotomy of a very interesting environment that needs to be navigated very differently because now there's so many choices and there's so many ways to understand your or how to sell your business. And so what I was noticing, especially in working with small and mid-sized businesses, was that they didn't understand the basic fundamentals that would help them actually win and win in this new big world of easy access to information. And that's really like, who am I? Why am I different? And why do you, my consumer, want me? And those are the three fundamental questions you need to answer in order to become a brand. And so they would rely on logos and, you know, visual elements and think that that unites them in the brand. And those are elements of your visual cues for your brand, but it's not what makes the brand. So at the advice of some of the startup accelerators that I spoke at in Cincinnati, I decided to write this book and really meant to be a handbook. It's extremely dense, but it is very actionable. You could read it in a couple of hours, but it has exercises that allow you to think through what I call the what-if ideation process to really actually help you format your brand and really address why you even need a brand to begin with. And that is what the foundation of the book is. And the reason why I call it the superhighway of relevancy is because that is what you need to cultivate for yourself, for your own business, in order to reach your consumer as fast as you possibly can, because you have limited money, you have limited time, you have limited resources, and you need to be able to then to cultivate that in order to be the best pathway for your business. And I call that building brand love. So your superhighway of relevancy helps you cultivate brand love to connect to your consumer quickly and be able then to generate the impact that you want to generate.
Well, I certainly don't want to give away all the secrets of the book, so I urge you and the audience to go out and buy Superhighway of Relevancy. And how can our listeners contact you and get more information?
Oh, I love to do that. It's my favorite thing. It's what I've been spending all my time doing now. So all they need to do is reach out to me. Ann at anncandido.com. Anncandido.com is my website. Then my email is Ann at anncandido. So that way you can like reach out to me, and I'd love to connect, love to consult and help all these businesses cultivate brand love, because 90% of decisions are emotionally led. So when you can wrap your mind around that and really lean into that, it gives you new possibility and new potential for your business to live into. And that's what I love to untap. I love to help businesses figure out what's possible for them that they didn't even realize was possible just even a few minutes ago.
And if you got time for a few callers' questions, that would be great. So here's caller number one wants to know, what would you advise a startup in terms of how to prioritize their marketing budget?
That's a very good question. It really depends on what you're selling. So if you're selling an element that is very transactional, so for example, if you're selling a thing and you're really just trying to gain awareness and reach of your widget, your thing, but it doesn't need a ton of explanation. Sometimes SEO and Google are the best way of just getting that reach. Now you want to make sure that you are managing that in order to get the best efficiency for your reach by making sure you're targeting the right audience. And there's lots of it's one of the things that my Forthright People does is really help you manage that strategy. Now, if you your thing requires a little bit more explanation, if it's a little bit more of emotionally led, then you might choose Facebook ads, because it allows you to then be in a context of where your consumer is going to be most receptive to those messages. So you have to really think about where your consumer is, where are they going to be most receptive to your messages, what kind of message you really need to give them. Is it a short, quick, just here, this is it, this is what you are, this is what you've been looking for, or is it more of an emotionally led message that is, hey, you know, this is going to connect in your life in a way that you was unprecedented and you didn't expect. And so that might be a different channel for that. So start with your consumer. Start with understanding what they need to know about you, and then figuring out what's the best way of reaching them, and that helps you make that decision. And if they need any help on that, you can reach out to me, because social strategy and paid strategy, SEO and SEM, is one of the things that we specialize in.
That's a solid answer. Thank you for that. Here's another caller who's got a startup podcast and wants to have you comment on how to sell brand sponsorships.
So again, it depends on what kind of podcast it is, but here's what I've found is if you need to offer value before you're going to get some value in return. So what I find is that, and this is what I tell a lot of my talent who are also looking for brand sponsorships, is give a little love and then you might get some love in return. So for example, if you really love like a specific food, you know, recognize that you love that food, call them out and say that, you know, this is one of my favorites, this is what I use it for. I can tell you, and I know you would know this too, Rick, from being in P&G, that brand managers and brand specialists have all that on Google. Like they have all their Google alerts set up. So if you're mentioning something, if you're recognizing, like they might see that, they might hear that, and then they get interested. So I find if you give a little love, you may get a little love in return. The other thing is that you need to, you know, reach out, do your homework, and figure out who is going to be the best to actually be a brand sponsor of your podcast and why. So you have to sell it in a way, again, that shows that you're connecting with and you have a like-minded purpose and vision for the consumer that they care about as well. So find a way to say, you know, hey, we have these common interests. We're both going after this consumer. Here's how I can help you. Here's how you can help me. It helps to create more of a win-win relationship partnership than just being a transactional, hey, you know, how much do you cost in order for me, you know, to get some, you know, brand sponsorships here. So those are a couple things to think about.
And to that caller, don't call the Tide brand manager, right?
Yeah, I used to get about that was all deferred to me, too, because I was the Tide communications manager, and I would get many of those on a regular basis. That's one where if you give a little love, sometimes you get love in return.
And here's our last caller who wants your advice on should their company offer a share of their organization to a marketing agent so they can act like a shareholder?
Ooh, that's a tough question. It really depends on what your business, your short-term, your long-term business goals are and how much, what your valuation is and then how much money you actually need. So it depends on a lot of different things there, because it could make sense to have a marketing, be part of your equity mix. But I wouldn't do that unless they're adding a whole lot more value, because you're going to be married to them forever. So, I mean, or at least until you sell the business or buy them out of their equity shares. So I'm always very, very careful, and I've worked in some of these situations too, of like recommending giving up equity for service unless you believe that this is somebody that you're going to want to be married to for a very long time. And that's not usually the case. And I've worked with many marketing agencies, communications agencies, and now I have my own. It's not usually the case. And the reason why is because lots of things happen. People change over there, you know. So if, you know, imagine if that whole marketing agency, everybody left and they got a whole new people and it totally changed the whole vibe of the agency, is that somebody you want to still be connected with? So you kind of have to, you know, weigh the pros and the cons, but getting in bed with a service provider as part of your equity is not something to be taken lightly at all.
And that's good advice. We appreciate that. Well, it all is tied in with the superhighway of relevancy. And we hope that all of you go out and buy the book. And one final question for you today is, what do you consider to be the status of P&G in terms of finally having a female CEO?
Wow. Yeah. You know, ironically, I just wrote a blog on this not too long ago, and I didn't call out P&G by name, but I did reference the fact that, you know, P&G is one of those companies who has yet to have a women CEO and even have somebody in position to be women CEO. And, you know, I got to say, though, it goes to both sides. And, you know, I'm not trying to deflect the question by saying read my blog, but I do go right into, you know, my thought process on that. But, you know, really it's men and women are going to have to come together and really recognize the biases that are not, you know, just in us within our as people, but in the systems that are holding that back. From that actually happening. You know, for example, one thing that it sounds very tactical, but it's actually very real, is women change their names when they get married, right? So I've seen it not only for myself, but I saw it in a very high profile woman leader in P&G when I was actually sitting in a conversation with somebody, and we were talking about her, and they're like, I don't know who she is. And I mentioned what her main name was. They're like, oh, that's who it is. She had lost the first half of her legacy because the name connection was not made. And that happens a lot. So, you know, what a shame that, like, you know, women, because they changed their name, have to work so much harder to connect their legacy and build that, you know, that proof of who they are, which is like so critical as in reputation within the company, because it's not just what you do, it's who you know and how you're connected and what people talk about, how people talk about you. That's what really like gets the fuel to really raise women leaders. So it's just simple things like that. And then, but there's also a lot more, like process-driven things that are also in the system that I think, you know, or not only just happening to women, but women also, you know, fail to cultivate, like raising women up. When there's a scarcity mindset, it starts feeling like there's a lot of alpha females out there, and that becomes a battleground for, well, who's going to be the female who does this, as opposed to like, okay, there's enough room for everybody. How do we raise up multiple females, you know, in an effort to have like this whole like community of females raising up? So, it's interesting psychologically. It's also interesting, especially in the heritage. I don't think anybody looks at it and says, are intentionally trying to hold women down. I just don't think anybody's kind of gone in there and done the hard work of figuring out really, really what is holding it back and trying to instill new rules of operation, if you will, in new mindsets, to be able to cultivate it on both sides.
Well, Anne, thanks so much for being on our show. We sure appreciate you. Folks, again, you can contact her at Anne@AnneCandido.com. And we appreciate the beautiful book that you've written. Congratulations, Anne, and please come back and see us again.
It was my pleasure. I had such a great time, and thank you so much, Rick, for having me on.
That was Anne Candido. We appreciate her being on our Success Made to Last show today. And as we always say, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program. And thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy. They also say, crunch tacos, not abs. And psst, you're crazy is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is, life is short, lick the bowl. If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen Ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen Ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.